Okay, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, let's move on. As fast as we possibly can, let's move on. Okay, get our hearts right. It says, brothers, I could not address you as spiritual but as worldly, mere infants in Christ. I gave you milk, not solid food, for you're not ready for it. Indeed, you're still not ready. You are still worldly. For since there is jealousy and quarrelling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere men? For when one says, I follow Paul, another, I follow Apollos, are you not mere men? What after all is Apollos? And what is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe, as the Lord has assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The man who plants and the man who waters have one purpose, and each will be rewarded according to his own labour. For we are God's fellow workers, you are God's field, God's building. By the grace God has given me, I lay a foundation as an expert builder, and someone else is building on it. But each one should be careful how he builds. For no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. If any man builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, wood, hay or straw, his work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each man's work. If what he has built survives, he will receive his reward. If it is burnt up, he will suffer loss. He himself will be saved, but only as one escaping through the flames. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple, and that God's Spirit lives in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy him, for God's temple is sacred, and you are that temple. Do not deceive yourselves. If anyone of you thinks he is wise by the standards of this age, he should become a fool, so that he may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's sight. As it is written, he catches the wise in their craftiness. And again, the Lord knows that the thoughts of the wise are futile, so there's no more boasting about men. All things are yours, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas or the world or life or death or the present or the future. All are yours, and you are of Christ, and Christ is of God. So then, men ought to regard us as servants of Christ and of those entrusted with the secret things of God. Now it is required that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful. I care very little if I am judged by you or by any human court. Indeed, I do not even judge myself. My conscience is clear, but that does not make me innocent. It is the Lord who judges me. Therefore, judge nothing before the appointed time. Wait till the Lord comes. He will bring to light what is hidden in darkness and will expose the motives of men's hearts. At that time, each will receive his praise from God. Now, brothers, I have applied these things to myself and Apollos for your benefit, so you may learn from us the meaning of the saying, do not go beyond what is written. Then you will not take pride in one man over against another. For who makes you different from anyone else? What do you have that you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you did not? Already you have all you want. Already you've become rich. You have become kings, and that without us. I wish that you really had become kings, so that we might be kings with you. For it seems to me that God has put us apostles on display at the end of the procession, like men condemned to die in the arena. We have been made a spectacle to the whole universe, to angels as well as to men. We are fools for Christ, but you are so wise in Christ. We are weak, but you are strong. You are honoured, we are dishonoured. To this very hour we go hungry and thirsty, we are in rags, we are brutally treated, and we are homeless. We work hard with our own hands. When we are cursed, we're blessed. When we are persecuted, we endure it. When we are slandered, we answer kindly. Up to this moment, we have become the scum of the earth, the refuse of the world. And we'll stop there. That's a lot of reading, to say the least. But it's interesting, as I said, you know, Jared's communion kind of, at the end, Paul deals with this. You know, he talks at the very beginning, he says, brothers, I could not address you as spiritual, but as worldly. And you know, when you think about worldly, you think of someone who's just kind of wrapped up in the world, you know, the greed and all those sorts of things for sure, and they want all these great things. But here Paul seems to be this worldliness, he seems to attract it to the whole idea of men and their whole attitude with regards to men. It's interesting when I looked at Corinthians, and I was always taught, and probably rightly so, and when as I read Corinthians, that it's easy to see this church as a bit of a mess. You know, I mean, you think about that, you think, everyone would say, man, the Corinthian church, what a problem church. They had immorality. We haven't even dealt with that yet. You know, they had all sorts of divisions he's talking about here. They had communion problems. They had their communion, and people wouldn't eat, and they'd use the communion to come and eat, in some sense. You know, there were tongue-speaking issues. People would claim, Paul would give the gifts to some people, and some people had the gifts, some people had certain gifts, and that was a problem for them. And you think, man, what a church. And you know, I thought to myself, if we could travel back in time and you went to the first service you went to of the Corinthian church, what would you expect to find? If you read this, reading this, and you went back, you think, okay, I'm going to see all these problems. But I really wonder if you would see all these problems. You might get there, and someone's there, and they're, man, hugging you. Hey, bro! From the 21st century, welcome! It's great to see you. You're dressed a bit funny, but man, look at you. Wow! How great to have you. I saw my fellowship. Someone would take you back to their home. You think, man, this church is fine. What's wrong with this church? And the point of Paul's message here in 1 Corinthians 3 and 4 is really to do with that. This whole idea of how we make judgments and how we compare and not compare. Because I wonder if we took some stats on our own church. And I'm not going to defend the Corinthian church and say they didn't have problems. But if we took a little bit of inventory here about how we're doing. I'm not going to be overly negative here. The point of this is simple. That what if we took some stats about our own situation? How many of us are trapped in sin? How many people here are struggling with internet pornography? How many people are secretly gambling, smoking, drinking too much, getting drunk? What about commitment levels? What about how many of us are really sharing our faith, really living like disciples? What about our commitment level? How many of us are really committed to the body, or are we simply Sunday Christians? What about just simply people's relationships with God? What are they like? Are we really making the effort to read, draw close to God, having that personal time, that prayer time with God? You know, what are we like? Now, overall, I love the Melbourne Church. Overall, I think we're a phenomenal church. But the point is this, we can all dig a little bit. We can all dig and get into each other's lives and find this, and we could print that. But the point that Paul's going to make here with this church is there's so much into that. It's so worldly. It's so much into men, the boasting, the judging. He says, man, it's driving you crazy. It's driving you crazy. And what's it all about at the end of the day? It will all be about ego and pride. It will all be about pride. One says, I mean, it's amazing to me that really these two chapters are about this very thing he says. One of you says, I follow Paul. One of you says, I follow Apollos. He says, are you not mere men? Where are you guys going to? And Paul revealed to them a very valuable lesson that he has learnt. And my lesson today is entitled, The Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness. The Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness. And a lot I'm going to talk about today in the brief time we have is about this book by Timothy Keller entitled The Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness. I don't know if you've read it or not. It's, as you can see, my sort of book. This is the sort of book I like. Okay? Short, small, put in your pocket, thin, and more importantly, big words. My sort of book. You know, I was reading this again. I've already read this, and I was reading this again. And Timothy Keller's book is all about the passages between 1 Corinthians 3:21 and 4:6. And he really makes this point, this whole idea about, and he really hammers the whole idea of self-esteem and ego. And as you read it more and as you look into the text, you really realise the whole idea that, yeah, a lot of our issues are worldly, and a lot of our issues are wrapped up in the judging, the comparing, the boasting, and even judging ourselves. You know, the whole idea of whether you have low self-esteem or high self-esteem. You know, he talks about this whole thing in this book. What I'm going to do right now, because I know I've done a fair bit of reading already, we're going to read some more just to get the text. Because what he talks about is, he talks about that the ego of people inside of us all are three things. I'm going to read one of them, but are three things. One, it's empty. Second, it's painful. And three, it's busy. In other words, and think about ego as pride, whatever you want to call it, but he talks about the whole idea that, but this is the way we are. It's all about self. It's all about our self-perceptions. And Paul will go on and he'll say, you know what, I don't even judge myself. Not do I only judge anyone else. I don't care what anyone else thinks, but I don't even care what I think. And he gets to this point, this whole idea that we need to get to this point where we have this freedom, but it's just like, we don't matter. And as I said, it's interesting what Jared talked about, because at the end of the day, you know, if we're going to get there, it's understanding these lessons. The freedom from self-forgetfulness. Now, we're going to read some together. I'm going to read from the book, and you're going to read from the screen. Let me see if I get this right. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll read some of this together. The reason I did this is because if I just to read all this, it'd be hard for you to follow. Just read with me. It says, have you ever thought about the fact that you do not notice your body until there is something wrong with it? When we are walking around, we are not usually thinking how fantastic our toes are feeling or how brilliantly our elbows are working today. We would only think like that if there had previously been something wrong with them. That is because the parts of our body only draw attention to themselves if there is something wrong with them. The ego often hurts. That is because it has something incredibly wrong with it, something unbelievably wrong with it. It is always drawing attention to itself. It does so every single day. It's always making us think about how we look and how we are treated. People sometimes say their feelings are hurt, but our feelings can't be hurt. It is the ego that hurts. My sense of self, my identity, our feelings are fine. It is my ego that hurts. Walking around does not hurt my toes unless there is already something wrong with them. My ego would not hurt unless there was something terribly wrong with it. The thing about it is, it is very hard to get through a whole day without feeling snubbed or ignored or feeling stupid or getting down on ourselves. That is because there is something wrong with my ego. There is something wrong with my identity. There is something wrong with my sense of self. It is never happy. It is always drawing attention to itself. These to me, I will read on in a minute, but these to me are very... Is that it? Oh, have I got another? When do I have to turn the page? Because I'm not... Oh, I've meant to turn the page already, was I? Oh, sorry. Where'd you get up to? I got that. So where's that? I've got to find that. Oh, it has ego that hurts. Okay. So read that a little bit yourselves. I'm not going to read it again now. Thanks very much. Go right ahead. It's always happy drawing attention to itself. You got that? Okay. I was going to say something, but let's just read on. So first of all, it is empty. Secondly, because it is like a bloated stomach that is disintended, it is always painful. And thirdly, the ego is incredibly busy. In other words, it is always drawing attention to itself. It is incredibly busy trying to fill the emptiness. And it is incredibly busy doing two things in particular, comparing and boasting. Now, whether you believe this or not, but I tell you, it takes... You know, after reading this book, I thought to myself, we need to do a series on this. Because this is hard to get down in one lesson. So really, for me, this is kind of like hopefully whetting the appetite. But for me, the more I think about this, and even just preparing my lesson, it occurred to me so much. And I remember when I first read this book, how full of myself I am. And how much of what I do or don't do has to do with how I feel, or I get disappointed, or I get hurt. And so many of our issues, I'm telling you. Now, this doesn't mean you can't, mourn or hurt for someone who's lost or anything like that. This is about when it comes to you. But I think 98% of our issues are self-related. and are ego-related and pride-related. While we do things, while we pull back at times, it's all to do with you. And Paul will go on and make a very valuable point and say, man, if we can empty ourselves, if we can truly empty ourselves, the difference we can make in this world and the difference we will feel. Because a lot of it is us. A lot of it is us. So first point, two quick points today. The first point is simply ego dilemma. The ego dilemma. The first thing we need to do, and the second point will be never about me. I normally say what about me, but never about me. You know, the ego dilemma. And this is the whole point about this, is that these, and this is obviously what Paul's dealing with in the Corinthian church. It's all about ego. It's all about someone following him, someone following him. They're boasting, they're judging. And what Timothy Keller does, he takes this, and Paul does it as well, he takes it one step further. Because Paul will go on and say, I don't judge myself, I don't care what I think about myself, and you know what, my conscience is clear, but that doesn't even make me innocent. I'm so done with it being about me, I'm trying to pull me totally out of the picture. And let me tell you now, that's an easier thing said than done. An easier thing said than done. You know, Paul, Timothy Keller will go on, he'll mention the whole idea of, where's my book gone? How could I lose it so fast? Oh, here it is. Gee, man. How could I? Yeah, it's a different sort of forgetfulness. So let me give you another, and this is again to bring you into the picture a little bit. So it says, up until the 20th century, this is interesting, up until the 20th century, traditional cultures, and this is still true of most cultures in the world, always believe that too high a view of self was the root cause of all evil in the world. What is the reason for most of the crime and violence in the world? Why are people abused? Why are people cruel? Why do people do bad things they do? Traditionally the answer was, you know, this word that, you know, this pride, if you like. And he goes on, and he says, but today, and this is interesting, he says, but our belief today, and this is modern psychology, this is 20th century psychology, has turned that theory on its head. And says, no, it's going to go on and say that, no, most of the abuse, most of the issues that people have, most of the people that are locked up in jail, most of the people that do things to each other, bad things, be it pedophiles, rape, abuse, you know, whatever, all those sorts of issues that we have, crime, murder, is all to do with low self-esteem. No, don't look up there, because I'm not going to put this up there. So he says, our belief today, and it is deeply rooted in everything, that is that people misbehave for lack of self-esteem and because they have too low view of themselves. Now, at the end of the day, what he's going to say is, no, that's not the issue. Matter of fact, he'll go on and quote this woman who says, the significant thing, the psychologist out of the States, the significant thing she says is that there is no evidence that low self-esteem is a big problem in society. Now again, what Paul will go on and say when you read it carefully is he says, I'm not interested in low self-esteem and I'm not interested in high self-esteem, because both are what? Both are consumed with self. See, we think, oh, you know, we might say, you know, oh, but I'm just, you know, I've really got a poor opinion of myself. I'm really just shy and I'm timid and I've got a real low self-esteem. What does that say about you? Either way, you're obsessed, and if you're the opposite, you're still obsessed with self. Neither are good. And what he's going to get to the fact of saying, I don't want anything to do with either of them. I just want to be what God wants me to be. Devoid of any of those things. You know, I don't think we realise how much this is an issue in our society. You know, it's interesting to me in Luke 9:23, no need to turn there, but in Luke 9:23, Jesus said to the crowds, if anyone would come after me, he must do what? What's the first thing he says? He must deny himself. You know, when I do discipleship with someone, I say, why does Jesus say the very first thing he says to these crowds, if you want to come after me, you must deny yourself? Why? Because the biggest thing that's going to get in the way is what? You. You're the biggest problem. Don't look anywhere else. Okay? Yeah, we all have things done to us. We can all have excuses why we are, or who we are, and why we are what we do, and why we do what we do, and why we don't do, but it all comes back to you. You can always blame somebody else, and we're forever playing the blame game. and using logic to apply. You know, I studied the Bible with a guy a few years ago. He became a brother from Monash Clayton, and I forgot his name, don't need to say his name anyway, but you know, he was struggling with lust a lot in his life. And he said to me, he said, you know, it's very interesting, because he said, I think he either heard a lesson or heard some preacher, but he went to some talk, I think, about this, about lust in men. And he said, you know, it was a real revelation, because this preacher got up and he said, you know, the biggest problem why men lust, and that's both sides of the fence, but why lust is there is simply ego. And I remember him telling me that. And I never forgot it. I thought, I would never have said that lust is wrapped up in ego. I would never have said it's wrapped up in pride. But you know, why is that? Why? When I think about it, it actually makes perfect sense to me. Because the ego sees a beautiful woman, or a good-looking man, for that matter, so we're going to apply it to both sides of the fence, and says, you know what? I should have been able to have that. Mm. You know, I kind of deserve that. Why can't she be mine? Or why can't he be mine? Believe it or not, it is, when you boil it down, it comes back to pride. We think we're owed it. We think we deserve it. But you can apply that to so many other things then, because that lust is not just towards the opposite sex. That lust can obviously turn into greed. And you start looking at the world, and it's the same thing. Why do we struggle with being content with what we have? Why is it never good enough? It's ego. It's pride. We feel like we should have something better. He'll go on in the book, and it's such a great book. He goes on, he talks about the whole idea of, you know, why are we proud about what we do or don't do? Like we might take pride in ourselves. Because it's usually we're comparing ourselves to somebody else. We're proud that our achievement is either equal to or better than someone else's. And he makes the point, he says, you know what, if we were all the same, if we were all rich, or we had all the same wealth, we'd nothing to be proud about. Yeah. But we get proud, and we it feeds us, because we somehow, it needs to be more, it needs to be better, we're just not content. And that's how it works. It is, it's such an ego thing. And when you boil it down, Paul will get down there and go, you know what, this is rubbish, what are you guys doing? I mean, he'll go on and talk about all this other stuff, how they're the scum of the earth and all that. He's really trying to play it down big time. But we need to recognise, church, that we have an ego problem. And more so in our society. And the key for a lot of us is to deal with it. You know, Paul says, if you go back to 1 Corinthians 3 for a second. You know, it's so prevalent. In 1 Corinthians 3, you know, at the very beginning there, he says, For one says, I follow Paul, another, I follow Apollos. Are you not mere men? And it's interesting, because you think, well, what were they doing? You know, what were they doing? I follow Paul, I follow Apollos. And he'll go on and say Cephas as well. It brings up Paul, Peter. You know, what was the big deal? Well, obviously some were doing right. Some were saying, you know what? He baptized me. Or he studied the Bible with me. Or maybe they were comparing leadership styles. Maybe they were saying, you know what, I prefer him. Matter of fact, the Corinthians will say of Paul that he's more way in his letters. They say, they accuse Paul of saying, you know, when you're really bold. You know, you're really bold when you're away from us in these letters. But by face to face, you're not so much chop. And he actually says that. They actually say that. They accuse him of that. So maybe it was this you know, one says, you know, maybe they say, I prefer Paul's preaching. Nah, I'm telling you now, mate, Apollos is the better preacher. Sound familiar? How many of us think that way? You know, we get to the point where we start comparing leaders. I mean, it happens. I know it happens here. And I appreciate the encouragement at times, for sure, but I'm not sure it's wise when people start saying, man, you're my favourite preacher. Because that automatically says, as soon as you say that to somebody, what does it make them think? Straight away they're saying what? automatic human nature, sinful nature, comparing, judging, boasting. Wait, no, hang on. He's the better preacher. No, he's not the better preacher. Man, you need to listen to this guy. And automatically that poor guy that you said is your favourite preacher now gets demoted on somebody's list where there never should be a list in the first place. And we do that. It's not about that. The point is what? That we need to enjoy whatever's there. I come up here, I do the best I can. I never wing my sermons, okay? They may feel like they're winged. They may come across like they're winged. And I'm sorry if it comes across that way. That's not my intention. I put time into my lessons. I do. And it's not about that. I mean, Sam does a phenomenal job. I don't want to be compared with Sam. But you do it. And you compare leadership styles, and you do that too. What are you going to do if one day, and let me tell you, I don't know how long it'll be, but one day I will have a successor to being lead evangelist. It will happen. Come on, Brandon. No pressure. That's right, no pressure. But you know, it will. And, you know, amen. Maybe it's going to be Sam. Does it matter? Does it matter? It shouldn't matter. But for some of us, it may matter. And it's no different to what these guys were doing. It's so subtle. And we play these little games. And look, again, I've had people say to me, Mike, you're my favourite preacher. Well, amen. But you know what? That's not my goal. My goal is not to become your favourite preacher. My goal is just to preach the word. And I hope you get something out of it. And that's it. And we take everybody on their merit. And I hear it. I hear it among the campus. I hear it among everybody. Everyone's got their, oh, they don't like this guy, they like this guy. That's what Paul's talking about. It is worldly. So if Paul came up here and he preached a sermon and you didn't like it, you go, well, not reading Paul's letters anymore. And it becomes, we don't understand, it's all wrapped up in this. It's all wrapped up in ourselves and how we think. And it's ungodly. It's not of God. You know, it's tough enough as it is. You know, this is a challenge for me. I've got to take my, every time when I preach, I say, God, take me out of it. Because my temptation is, I want to get the praise. My temptation, I hope I do a good job, someone's going to come up to me. The temptation is to be that way. I've got to take myself totally out of the picture. Because it's not about me.
Come on.
And the truth is, it should never be about me. You know, why do we struggle to lead? Why do we want to hide in the shadows? Why do we feel like as soon as we say I'm not good enough, as soon as you think, well, I tried that and I failed. What is failing? There's no such thing as failing in the kingdom of God. There's no such thing as failing in life. It's just life. But we use that terminology. I can't do this, I can't do this. That's all wrapped up in what? As soon as you say, I can't do, it's wrapped up in what? Ego. And you go, oh, but look at me, I can't speak properly, or whatever. You know, what can I possibly do? It's wrapped up in ego, every single bit of it. It's all about you. And that's the way it is. And you've got to reflect on this. Reflect on how much of you is present. So we've got an ego issue that I believe we have to all have to deal with. I do. My ego is huge. I've got a massive ego. Let me tell you now, I'm competitive. I want to be seen in a particular way. I want to always be seen. I grew up wanting myself to be seen in the good books and everybody. I did my best to be liked by everyone. You may think, well, geez, not much changed then, has it? But that was me. I had to be accepted. I wanted to be accepted by people. And it meant so much to me. And all my Christian life, I tried to really just deal with that. It's not about me. Which brings me to my last and quickly final point. Hope I'm too much out of time. My last point was simply, never about me. We know the song, what about me? It isn't fair, I've had enough and I want my share. You know, I mean, what a stupid song. a stupid song. When you think about it, seriously, some of the songs we sing are stupid, and more importantly, the people that write them. I mean, what about me? I want my share. What share? What do you want? What's your problem? What have you missed out on, exactly? You know, when, as I read this, I couldn't help but feel about Christ. You know, never about me. Because, you know, if there was anything about Jesus, it was never about him. Just think about it. When you read the Gospels in the sense, from that point of view, that it was never about, and you'll see Jesus was never about me. He says, you know what, I did exactly what my Father's commanded me to do. It was never about him. He was always distancing himself. He says, I'm just here to serve the Father. And I love Jared's communion because it highlights that point that yes, it is tough for us humans. And I can easily sit back and I could defend that as well. Because by nature, our sinful natures, it's very difficult to be that way. But with Christ, and Christ was the only example, with Christ and his help, I believe we can totally be that way. And that's the way we need to be. We need to understand, and if we're going to get this, we're going to have the impact we need to have, it has to be, it's never about us. Go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 3 for a second. So he goes on, you know, he says, I follow Paul, another I follow Apollos, I am not mere men. What after all is Apollos and what is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe. As the Lord has assigned each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. And you know, he makes it so clear. He says, what are you guys doing? You know, we planted, we're just nothing. We're nothing in the scheme of life. It's only God, and he's the one that makes it grow. And here's the lesson. You know, he's saying, man, it's not about me. Why are you elevating us? Why are you going down this path? And he knows that if they're thinking this way, they've totally lost the plot. The fact that you're thinking this way means you're so caught up with you, it's unbelievable. And he wants them to understand, it's never about me. And we have to say that to ourselves. It's something you probably want to write up on your mirror. Not about me. It's never about me. It's not about me. You know, I was thinking about all the hurts and the disappointments. You know, what is it? Because it's about us. You know, what will save our marriages? What will save our very lives? It's understanding it's never about me. Why do our marriages fail? Why aren't our marriages where they need to be? Because it's all about you. You know that. The biggest problem in your marriage is you. If I asked you what the biggest problem in your marriage is, the first thing your sinful nature will think about, have a guess what? The other person. It's nature. We're so full of it. It's so natural to think it's the other person's problem. Oh, if I wasn't married to this flat Wally, if God gave me someone else, how do I get this flat bozo anyway? And I don't blame you. I think half of you have married bozos anyway. It's true. And I'm one of them. But it's true. It's just so true. Back to Keller for a second. Interesting point. He quotes C.S. Lewis out of Mere Christianity here. And in page 31, if you want to turn there. No, just kidding. You know, he goes on, Paul is saying something astounding. I don't care what you think, I don't care what I think. He's bringing us into a new territory that we know nothing about. His ego is not puffed up, it is filled up. And the reason why we need to empty ourselves, people, is to bring Christ in. The more empty space we have dealing with self, there's more chance of Christ at being filled with Christ. And that always has to be the goal. You know, he says he's talking about humility. Then he goes on, he says, C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity makes a brilliant observation about gospel humility. He says at the very end of his chapter on pride, if we were to meet a truly, this is C.S. Lewis talking now, if we were to meet a truly humble person, Lewis says, we would never come away from meeting them thinking they were humble. Interesting, isn't it? They would not be always telling us they were a nobody. Because a person who keeps saying there are nobody is actually a self-obsessed person.
True.
We do that, right? When we convince ourselves of that too. Where was I? The thing we remember, the thing we would remember from meeting a truly gospel humble person is how much they seem to be totally interested in us.
Come on.
That's it, right? You always worry about someone who's always talking about what? Themselves. You know, self-forgetfulness is always wrapped up in the other. Matter of fact, you don't want the conversation on you. You're generally interested in the other person. He says, because the essence of gospel humility is not thinking more of myself or thinking less of myself. It is thinking of myself less. I probably should have written that one up. I thought about that. I thought that one needs to be up on big print. Do you want to read it again for you? I thought so. Because the essence of gospel humility is not thinking more of myself or thinking less of myself. It is thinking of myself less. Can someone come in and type this for me, just quickly? We can probably do it right now, can't we? No, it's a fucking... And I think they're lessons to learn. You know, it's never about me. The biggest problem, as I said in the beginning, is it's all about us. It's all about us. And you know, I think about this, and I think a lot of people struggle with this, because I think we think to ourselves, and I know this is why people don't become Christians. There are times why we don't give all, is because we're worried about losing ourselves. I really think we're working so hard to hold on. We somehow don't want to lose ourselves. We don't want to lose our identity. And I can't help but think, you know, there's so much, we don't have to worry about that, because there's so much of self in us.
Right.
Don't worry. The chances of you losing everything is pretty slim. And it's true, we're so consumed with, you know, if I give too much, I don't want to be seen as this. I don't want to be seen as some religious fanatic. You know, I don't want to kind of be this pious individual. I don't want to feel like I'm this person who's just lost it. Like, there's got to be some identity in me, doesn't there? No. Give it all up. But we're so worried. That's why people don't become disciples. There's something they want to hold on to. And generally it's some part of them. And that's why people are so threatened by Christ and the gospel. Because it challenges the very core of who they are and giving that up. You may have thought you failed. You may have thought whatever. I mean, at the end of the day, Paul says, one plants, one waters, God makes it grow. You know, what was going on there? And I think, again, why we struggle with evangelism. Why do some of us struggle so much with sharing our faith? Because when we do it, and if it doesn't work out, we feel what? Rejected. You know, we get disappointed. It's all about us, even in that. Sharing our faith. We're going to share our faith. Hopefully trying to share this great message. And if somebody doesn't react the way you want them to react, what do you get? You get hurt, you get disappointed, but generally not for them. It's generally for you. I remember there was a brother who used to be in the church, and we had many conversations about this. He said, you know, I've shared my faith all my Christian life, and not one person, I've been here for 15 years, and not one person has become a Christian. Not one. He was upset about it. I mean, it hurt his faith. It's like, what's God doing to me? Why is God treating me this way? How come there must be something wrong with me? He's not here anymore. And I'm telling you, that's part of the reason why. Part of the reason. Because of it's what that revealed in his heart that he never figured it out. It was never about him. It wasn't about whether someone listens or doesn't listen, whether someone comes along or doesn't come along. As we say, it's just one poor beggar giving bread to another poor beggar. We're just simply trying to plant and water God's seed. What happens from there is not up to us. But he was so caught up in him, so caught up in him, so much ego, so much self, he ended up falling away. Was it entirely that? No, but it was that mentality. You can see having that mentality, what it would do to you if you think that way. Let me tell you now, if I thought that way, I'd be long gone. It'd be like me coming to church and say, people don't listen. Look, they're falling asleep now. I can see some of you. You're falling asleep. What's the point? Why bother? No one really cares. So why should I? And let me tell you now, I've had that attitude. I've had that heart. And it's wrapped up in me. Yes. Bible talk leaders do it. I don't want to lead anymore. Oh, they're such a hard group to lead. Well, try being God. God looks down on mankind. And it's just everywhere. It's everywhere. How we act, why we act. Half the time, it's all about us. It's all about us. That's not God's plan. You know, Paul will go on, just to finish up. We're finishing up now. I know you're happy. You know, Paul will go on, he'll say, and this is to me, why he even has to do this. This is what he's been dragged. This mentality has dragged Paul into saying this stuff. You know, he says, for it seems to me, in verse 9, to me that God has put us apostles on display at the end of a procession like men condemned to die in the arena. We have been made a spectacle to the whole universe, to angels as well as to men. We are fools for Christ, but you are so wise. And it's an interesting point, right? I mean, I think so many of us are trying to be cool for Christ and not just simply, hey, no, I'm happy to be a fool for Christ. You are strong, but you are strong, you are dishonoured, we are dishonoured. This very day we go hungry and thirsty, we are in rags, we are brutally treated, we are homeless, we work hard with our own hands. When we are cursed, we bless. When we are persecuted, we endure it. When we are slandered, we answer kindly. Up to this moment, we have become the scum of the earth, the refuse of the world. And Paul's like, so don't you get it? Don't you get it, guys? This is not what we're about. This is the gospel. You know, you're taking pride in these things. You're boasting and judging. That's not us. And I think Paul's happy to say, you know, I'm happy to become the scum of the earth. And there are so many lessons here to learn. You know, today, I think we need to understand that we have an ego dilemma. And if you dig into your own life and look at your own heart, how you respond to failures, so-called failures, how you've responded to issues in your life, your marriage, all sorts of issues, you'll find it's all wrapped up in self. When you look at the mirror, how you dress, it's comparing this, comparing that, judging that person. It's, we're full of it. That's what hinders the gospel and hinders you being filled with Christ. So hopefully today we can deal with the ego dilemma in our hearts, have the freedom that comes from self-forgetfulness, and understand it's never about me, but only about God and fulfilling His purpose for our lives. Let's all stand and sing one final song. Amen.